This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. This is Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines of stories from around the world, as well as delve into issues related to the media industry. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. The explosion of computer algorithms and automation combined with social media have given rise to new forms of spreading political propaganda. Social media manipulation is becoming increasingly common, if not already the norm, and we're only just starting to understand the strategies being deployed. Joining me on the show today to discuss this is Samantha Bradshaw, a researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute. Samantha, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So you're involved in the Computational Propaganda Research Project at the Oxford Internet Institute. Could you tell us about this project and what your work there covers?
Yes. So at the Computational Propaganda Project, we study the various ways that algorithms, automation, big data, all of these new affordances or characteristics of social media interact with democracy. So part of our research looks at, you know, the growth of disinformation on social media and how that might affect public discourse or election outcomes. Another strand of our research involves working with civil society groups to build resilience to these kinds of campaigns.
And why is this type of research particularly important at this time?
This kind of work is really important because social media has become essentially the main platform through which we communicate with one another. These big companies are essentially de facto infrastructures for democracy. It's where we consume news and information that's relevant to forming our political opinions or our political identities and shaping our values. It's a place where we discuss, debate, deliberate politics as well with our friends and our relevant communities. And it's also a place where politicians or other actors might try to shape our beliefs through advertising or, you know, more maliciously through propaganda.
I wanted to get your thoughts because you mentioned how important it is to research on the way information is being misused or used for disinformation. But what would you say is the difference between propaganda and persuasion?
Yeah, so for me, I really see propaganda as being different from persuasion, because with propaganda, there's this element of anonymity or deception where you're trying to mask your identity or where this message is coming from. Whereas with persuasion, there isn't necessarily that same kind of identity deception taking place. Like I might, as a company, persuade you to purchase my product, but there's no hiding the fact that I want you to buy this product from me, the company. Whereas when it comes to propaganda, it's much more murky. And I think, you know, this identity-based deception plays a big role in separating those two concepts apart.
So looking at the focus of the Computational Propaganda Project, you issued a report back in September, and this is titled The 2019 Global Inventory on Organized Social Media Manipulation. The findings from the research covered 70 countries, including Malaysia, and it revealed that virtually all of them had some form of organized social media campaigning. Now, the shorthand for this is cyber troopers, but how is this defined for the purposes of the report?
Yeah, so we define cyber troops as either a government or political party organization who is using social media to manipulate public opinion in some way. We look for elements of what we call computational propaganda, which has to do with, you know, again, automation, algorithms, or big data, and using those affordances of technology to shape or influence or manipulate the outcome of elections or other events. So essentially a cyber trooper is some kind of government actor using computational propaganda to influence the outcome of an election or shape political beliefs and values.
Are these kinds of actors difficult to identify, especially in cyberspace? I mean, what counts as a cyber trooper that's linked to the government as opposed to a regular citizen just voicing their opinions really loudly using computational algorithms?
So there are a number of ways that we do attribution for this report. Largely, we're relying on publicly open and accessible data, whether that be platform announcements where the social media platforms themselves have identified campaigns being run by governments and taking down that kind of activity, or looking at other independent researchers and their work kind of tracking these phenomenon online. And researchers can do that in various ways. So we can look at the interaction of accounts, because accounts that are spreading propaganda and potentially, you know, working for a government or a political party, they have certain characteristics about the ways in which they interact that are very different from like what my digital footprint or your digital footprint would look like. For example, networks of accounts, they tend to, you know, like, share, retweet the same sorts of information to try to generate that false sense of popularity or momentum around a particular concept or a particular piece of content. And that's not the same kind of coordinated behavior that you might see when you can look at big data sets of how people are interacting with content online.
Right. So you're analyzing the digital footprint of an online account or persona and seeing how they interact with the cyber environment. So how then is data collected for the study?
So we collected data for the study by looking at publicly available resources, whether that be news articles, press releases from the platforms themselves, independent academic studies, even like government budgets and government documentation. And essentially, we did a big quoted content analysis where we systematically looked for keywords that had to do with social media manipulation and computational propaganda to identify instances and also actors. Once we did this big content analysis and kind of mapped out who the actors were and the kinds of tools they were using, we then went to other secondary literature to start corroborating points. And then we finished by doing some expert consultations with people who have much more local knowledge for the countries that we wanted to include in the report.
And what kind of time period are you working with? Is it focused within a certain window or is this more fluid?
The report is cumulative in the sense that every year we do the content analysis and that adds on to our evidence base from the year before and the year before. And some of the news articles, like, you know, date back to early 2010, 2009, some of the very early days of the social media platforms coming into existence. So, again, just to emphasize, it's a cumulative look at social media manipulation.
And before we dive into the findings, are there any other caveats that we should take into account when interpreting the data? And are there sort of gaps or weaknesses in the research that you'd be looking to fill in as the project continues?
Of course, there are several limitations to our methodology and to understanding the global picture of computational propaganda and social media manipulation. First of all, because we're only relying on publicly available information, that means only activity that have been identified previously are being captured and pulled into this report. So, because social media manipulation is such a secretive operation, you know, the people who are trying to use these tools of computational propaganda, they want to go undetected. It makes it hard to definitively say we've captured all activity, because there's probably lots of cases that haven't been identified by journalists, that haven't been identified by researchers, and that also probably haven't even been identified by the platforms themselves. And so just because something or a country isn't included in our report, or we don't highlight a specific case, doesn't mean that there wasn't computational propaganda involved in some kind of way.
I'm speaking to Samantha Bradshaw, a researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute. We'll continue the conversation after these messages. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. Hello, if you've just joined us, this is Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines as well as delve into issues related to the media industry. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. With me on the show today is Samantha Bradshaw, a researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute. We're discussing the research being carried out in the Computational Propaganda Project, specifically looking at the incidence of cybertroopers. So we're diving into the findings of the report. At the outset, what's the most worrying trend that you found from the research?
So for me, there are a couple worrying trends, I guess. The first is that we're certainly seeing more cases and more instances of computational propaganda around the world. And this is especially true for more closed authoritarian regimes who are using these tools as a form of information control. And whereas in the past, when we thought about information control, it was all about blocking access to certain kinds of websites or restricting the flow of information or censoring out other kinds of information. Now, information control blends disinformation and computational propaganda. So it's also now about creating information and creating narratives or drowning out certain activist or oppositional activities on social media. And so this evolution in the forms of information control is one of the worrying trends for me.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about the prevalence of cyber troops among the countries that you've researched?
Yeah, so in terms of the prevalence of cyber troops, we always tend to see a domestic actor in all of the countries that we have identified this kind of activity taking place, whether that be a government organization, maybe an organization tied to the military or to like an information bureau, or we see these kinds of activities taking place around campaigns and being used by political leaders or political parties to campaign during election times.
You mentioned one of the worrying trends was the communication strategies being used, such as the creation of disinformation or media manipulation. But you also documented incidences of trolling and harassment. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, definitely. So I think in quite a few countries, we've been seeing evidence of fake accounts working in a very coordinated way to attack journalists or political dissidents, especially women. In the Philippines, for example, Maria Ressa, one of the prominent Filipino journalists there, has faced a massive disinformation campaign against her designed to discredit her and her newspaper because of their negative reporting on the president of the Philippines there, President Duterte, and his, his war on drugs. Maria's case is, not a standalone example. I think in many countries, more and more journalists are being attacked, but in a very coordinated way, where hundreds of accounts will be sending hateful messages in the span of 30 minutes, an hour, just constantly bombarding individuals with threats, whether they be physical or sexual threats, with harassment, with insult, all designed to suppress freedom of the press and to suppress the speech of people who might not necessarily agree with the stance of the government.
One of the things in your report that I found particularly notable was the mention of an industry of trolling, the business behind this computational propaganda. What can you tell us about that?
So in many countries, we're seeing politicians or government actors also working with industry who might sell computational propaganda as a service. So the most prominent example of this would be Cambridge Analytica. They're well known for working on the Brexit campaign in the United Kingdom, but also on Donald Trump's presidential election in 2016 in the United States. But before that, they also worked in many countries in Africa and some countries in Asia as well, working with politicians to start testing a lot of the tactics that were used in Brexit in the 2016 election. And these tactics had to do with, various digital marketing techniques, so doing A and B testing of messages against specific segments of the population, either to garner partisan support or to suppress the participation and the turnout of oppositional voters.
At this stage, do we know sort of the size or value of an industry like this? Like how big an industry are we looking at?
So it's really hard to put an exact number on the industry itself. We see various companies offering services for various prices. I think I've seen some firms say they can get a hashtag trending for about $5,000. But I think it really depends on, the kinds of services that these firms are offering. Other contracts I've seen, be in the range of $20,000 or $30,000 US dollars, some up to $200,000 if they're very specific consulting projects.
Okay, so your research is going to continue for the foreseeable future still. In terms of regulation then, where do you think the onus lies when it comes to limiting or mitigating this kind of misinformation that's being spread on the internet?
So when it comes to addressing the problems of computational propaganda, I think they're so multifaceted and are going to require responses from government, from industry, and from citizens. I don't think there's going to be a silver bullet solution because there are just so many interconnected problems here. When we're talking about the spread of disinformation, or if we're talking about micro-targeting advertisements, or if we're talking about digital literacy and media literacy, all of these problems are interconnected in various ways and also connected to this bigger picture of computational propaganda and social media manipulation. And so platforms, governments, and citizens are all going to have a role to play here. I think, to be a little bit more specific in terms of what some positive steps for the future might be. First of all, I think platforms have a much greater role to play in their own private self-regulation. And a lot of that, their responses right now have only touched the surface of many of these problems. There's lots more transparency, lots more restrictions on political advertisements there, but that doesn't get to the deeper problem as to why a lot of disinformation goes viral in the first place. Mm. Ad spends and targeting disinformation to communities, it only reaches a few people. It might reach some of the right people, but it's not as widespread as the problem of virality. And when a disinformation story reaches hundreds of millions of people, to address those problems, we need to look deeper at the business models and, what incentivizes this kind of content to go viral in the first place.
You mentioned that the onus, it requires participation and involvement of everyone, and that would include even just individual consumers of social media. How should consumers of social media, how can they identify social media manipulation?
In terms of actually identifying manipulation, people can look for various indicators by checking out the profile history of accounts that seem a little bit suspicious. You know, are they tweeting in multiple languages? Are they tweeting lots and lots of stories at a rate that, you know, no human might want to be using Twitter at? Do they have not many followers but are following thousands of people? There are various indicators that people can look at to decide whether or not this account is a credible, genuine person. But I think at the end of the day, it also really just comes down to being nice to each other on the internet, because again, you know, democracy requires us to come together and to deliberate. And just because we don't agree on an issue doesn't mean we shouldn't still, you know, discuss and debate it.
Samantha, thanks very much for sharing your insight with us. I've been speaking to Samantha Bradshaw, a researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute. If you're interested to find out more about the Computational Propaganda Project, do check out their website. Coming up next is the 10 a.m. news bulletin, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.